Now, says Jehovah, the one who shaped me from the womb to be his envoy to bring Jacob back to him, to gather Israel, I am still honored in the eyes of Jehovah, and my God is my power. Interesting. From Isaiah chapter 49, verse 5, our daily scripture for today in the Word Green version of 2003, little children. The Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, is the article we've been studying all this time. Yesterday, we did chapter 4, paragraph 9, and I showed you the recipe in paragraph 10, which I think we'll skip over. You can follow it. I don't think you need any of the lecithin. I just happen to have lecithin on hand. I don't even know what that does. Back when I wrote this article, I knew nothing about nutrition compared to what I know now. Although I knew a lot more then than I had known when I was, you know, several years younger, even. But now I know so much more. I mean, if somebody had told me that I could take a single supplement. You know, I mean, this is the answer to a prayer of mine, right? I mean, I've been praying for this for a long time. I've been earnestly seeking, which is almost the same as prayer. If you believe in God, it is the same. I've been earnestly seeking and hoping and praying for, you know, I've been asking for, in other words, something that would help me lose weight. Anything. A technique, a food, a diet, or a method of doing it. And so it took a long time because I found a lot of different things that didn't work. And then I discovered alpha-lipoic acid, which apparently works. I mean, I've already lost weight. I can tell. I can see it. And it just makes you less hungry and less craving food. And it may not be good tasting. I think I might have tasted it yesterday when I took it on a virtually empty stomach. And I might have burped, and then I tasted this stuff that wasn't very good. I burped it up, and it was... But there's lots of stuff that I take that doesn't taste good. Glutathione doesn't taste good, although I wasn't taking that at that moment. But a lot of things, it could have been also that there's a citrus supplement I take, and there's a vision factor supplement. Could have been one of those. But I don't doubt that most of these supplements don't taste very good. That's not the point, actually. Not everything you eat has to taste good. If it makes you totally healthy, and if it's a perfectly natural, healthy substance, that's what counts. And this alpha-lipoic acid just seems to be phenomenal. And let's just wait and see what happens. I'll keep taking it. But I'm also taking this raw vegetable powder, which is a nutritional shake powder from Garden of Life, and that helped me also, I think, to start with, but it didn't have the same impact that this, because the difference with alpha-lipoic acid, my craving for sugar has gone down. Like, I'm not drinking as much of the sugary stuff, like the sugar in the iced tea. I'm diluting the iced tea more now. I'm just not needing the sugar. And I don't doubt that the hydrogen water is beneficial. I just haven't been drinking that for the past day or two. I'll have to get back to the hydrogen water, too. But no, I can see the fat just melting off my body. This is the time of year when we will find out in the winter whether I'll eat more or less, because in the winter I typically gain weight. Trying to stay warm, you eat more. One of the disgusting things about these retirement homes is they starve the inmates or the residents of these homes, the ones who are not eating. They starve them, but, I mean, they don't... No. I take that back. What I mean to say is they take their clothes away from them, take their clothes away to make them cold so that they will eat, because you know, when you're cold, you want to eat to generate heat. So they're not starving them. They're doing the opposite. They're trying to feed them, but they're doing it in this very inhumane way by taking their clothes away. It's just disgusting. There are a lot of things that have to be fixed in our society, but one thing about all of the news reports, everything about the news, all that stuff, I just realized yesterday and today that the reason why I can't do anything creative is because I'm thinking too much about what's happening and all the negative thoughts that I'm reading. And negative thoughts will kill your positive creativity, you know. So what you have to remember is none of these people who are saying these things are you. None of them are you. You are you. They are not you. So whatever they're saying, just ignore basically everything. You can read the news as far as on a very superficial level. You can look at it to see what's going on. But do not let any of it enter into you in terms of affecting your, you know, your joy. Because of that, it'll take away your joy, for sure. It'll take away your joy. And you want to be joyful in everything you do. That's what you really want to be doing. At the beginning of chapter 4, paragraph 11 now, we have a picture of Kelly Tillman, somebody who I called the world's first lead golf announcer, female. And her career was relatively short-lived, actually. But there she's shown at the Masters caddying for Arnold Palmer in that picture. Now, Arnold Palmer was at that time long past his prime. Of course, he was a very elderly gentleman at that point. Now, we might do nothing without Jehovah, for he's our creator. Look at all these scriptures I quote here. John 8, 28, 15 and 5, 21 and 3, 1 Corinthians 13, 14 and 1, 2 Corinthians 12 and 11, and Ephesians 2 and 12. As I read over my notes in the first part of the article which I am now writing, there appear to be at times many pathways upon which historians of the past ages have trod. By the way, yesterday I showed the calculation for the numbers I showed. The number that we worked out which was 7 times 41 squared times a bunch of other stuff. Where can I look that up quickly? I'm trying to think. I've never written an article with these numbers in it, but in this what from 1923 BCE, which is 10/19/154 Julian day number, that's the earlier number, until the later number 2423529, which is the first Egyptian constitution in 1923 of our common era in which we're living now, there are 2423529 minus 10191054 days. Divide that by 7 and then by 107 and then by 5 to the fourth power, you get 3. That is the multiple of 7 there. So that would be 7 times what? Let's just figure out what that is in terms of 7 times what. So let's divide by 3, then by 107, then by 5 to the 4th, and we get 7, right? Okay, so but let's just take this number, figure out what it is, because these numbers are now correct. That's now the correct number. It's a Thursday in 1923 BCE. It's April 17th in that year. Have that? Yeah, April 17th in that year. And then it's April 19th in the year 1923 CE, also a Thursday. Okay? And that's how we arrived at this number of days, right, between the two. So that, the number of weeks is 3 times 107 times 5 to the 4th, which is 200,625 weeks passed between that time in 1923 before Christ to 1923 after Christ, basically the two mirror dates that I was talking about yesterday. Now, I did a calculation yesterday that was something else. What was it? Maybe I can remember what it was. Let's see, 242. I remember I used the 242. 3529. I can remember that one. And I subtracted this other number, 1176227. That was the Exodus Julian Day number. And that was 1247302. 1247302 divided by 41 squared is 742. Divided by 7. 106, and that was the number we had yesterday. So that was from the Exodus in 1493 to 1923 of the Common Era. Divided by 2, and we get 53, right. That was the number I gave you yesterday. I made the mistake of confusing that with the other number that was also a multiple of 7. But what, by the way, what is this in terms of? We had 200,625 weeks, I think we just had, right? What do we have here in terms of weeks? If we take 41 squared times 7 times 2 and times 53. No, not times 7. Times 53 times 2. Right? What do we have in terms of weeks? 178,186. It's fascinating, isn't it? Because if we multiply that, the way we know that's right is we just multiply by 7, just to verify, and we get 1247302 again. So that's correct. Okay. So yeah, so that's an interesting number there. Let's see what that is again. What is that once again here? 178,186. The number of weeks between the Exodus, which is quite close in time, relatively speaking, to the time of Joseph in 1923, but from the Exodus to 1923, the first Egyptian constitution, 1923 of the Common Era, April 19th, it was promulgated. Okay, that's that. I mean, we can work that out, and every one of those dates was a Thursday, May 2nd, 1493 BCE, that was the Exodus. It was the Passover day, a Thursday. They left Egypt on that day, and all those things are correct. I just heard a story today. Somebody was determining the identity of Moses, but they started with the date for the temple as 967 BCE. Is that right? 967, 47, yeah, 967, which is, it's the wrong date, is the problem. If you start with the wrong date for the temple, you'll never find the correct Egyptian pharaoh, and you'll never find Moses in history if you're wrong by 47 years, which is what that is. 47 years too late, this, actually the temple is 1014 BCE, which we've demonstrated, and it's verified by everything we've done. In every way that we've, I mean, obviously there are always gaps in knowledge and nothing is absolutely perfect, maybe, but we've got so many ways of verifying it and so many things that would have fallen apart if we didn't have our chronology, that we just it's hard to have any doubt for our chronology. But you know what? Faith is not blind. Faith is always based on evidence. You always base it on evidence, because when hard times come, you might say, oh, well, God looks after me. But when the hard times come and God doesn't look after you anymore, you say, well, okay, God doesn't look after me. That's your first conclusion after, you know, your faith lets you down. So you have to have a faith which is based on something other than, like, say, there is an organization, let's say, that says, well, we'll look after you. We will look after you. But then, I mean, there are going to be some hurricane victims who don't get served by the organization, right? They're not going to be able to help everybody. So if faith is based on being helped by that organization, then some people's faith will fall apart if they're relying on that to keep their faith. So faith has to be based on something stronger than human organizations. It has to be based on proof, too. It has to be evidence. It has to be something real. It's got to be something that stands up in hard times over and over and over. It has to prove true in the hardest of times. Again and again, it can never let you down in order for it to be a true faith. So it's got to be based on evidence and proof and reality. There are many, many pathways upon which historians of the past ages have trod. This is both a burden and a blessing, and burden optional. The burden part is optional. I am truly amazed at the self-restraint that was exercised without any apparent reason by those without any interest. Now, that is a curious statement. But all my research was able to result in me learning that. In concluding this chapter, I would like to make only a few brief remarks about dating itself, turning rather to love. In Chinese mythology, the yellow emperor, Eber, you notice even the similarity of the word emperor to Eber, who was the first Chinese emperor, essentially the yellow emperor, Eber, emperor. The P and B are interchangeable, of course, between some different language, between the alphabets of when we translate different languages. P and B are interchangeable. We hear people say that all the time, and also D and T are interchangeable, and so many letters, G and C, or G and K, they're interchangeable. So you hear people talking like, thank you, also these. So the sound is interchangeable with the sound. So thank you, they say, and, when it's a C sound, they'll make it a G sound. But Eber, and so on, it goes on and on. When it's a T sound, they make it a D sound. Eber is a famous personage above how many others? The Yellow Emperor, right? Very famous. And a phoenix is said to have appeared at the end of his reign. It's from one of my notebooks, page 92. The eclipse of Nimrod is, as Eber was 109 years old, with his birth in the genealogy taking place 2883 BCE. That's the birth of Heber, the Hebrew Eber. He's the namesake of the word Hebrew. Also, Heber or Eber, or the Yellow Emperor, born 2883 BCE. A phoenix bird is a symbol of fire and of the Sothic cycle of 1460 years that the Egyptian Nimrod began in 2774 BCE. It's a long cycle, 1460 years that began in 2774. We discovered that. Nobody else discovered that. I mean, some people proposed that there was the start of the Egyptian calendar possibly around that time, but nobody came up with this eclipse. Nobody did this but us. This is symbolized by the graphic depiction of the eclipse on the Narmer palette. We discovered that also, but other people have noticed that it looked like an eclipse. I think that would be safe to say that. But this eclipse dates only by us to July 18th, 2774 BCE. It's annular, it's solar, and it falls on Thoth 1 of the ancient Egyptian calendar. That was our discovery. That's an amazing discovery. One of the biggest chronological discoveries ever is what I wrote. The circle of the annulus corresponds to the Sothic cycle. There's an idea. The circle of the annulus, of the annular ring. If it had been a total eclipse, there'd be no circle. There was a circle because of the fact it wasn't a total eclipse, it was annular. That circle symbolizes the Sothic cycle of 1460 years that began on that day. It is crucial to note that this eclipse was only perfectly annular on a line that included the location of Noah's Ark, Uzengili, shown on the map. And here it is, which is, it's in the eastern, very eastern part of Turkey there, on the border between Turkey, Armenia, Iran, in that, right on the border of Turkey, the modern day border. Back then there were no borders like that. So it was only annular on the line of that eclipse that's shown here, as this line that went through Spain and Italy and northern Greece and down through Turkey and around all the way over through India. Uzengili, Turkey, is 1,575 kilometers or 979 miles northeast of Cairo. Cairo's a city in Egypt, a very well-known city. Now, Sacred Annals by George Smith, page 317, has it that Berosus the Chaldean analyst refers to Abraham, that's Annalist, A-N-N-A-L-I-S-T, the writer of Annals, Berosus, refers to Abram, or Abraham, as he's later called, as 10th in lineal descent from the deluge. That's the same as what the Bible says, isn't it? Abraham being great and righteous and a man skilled in the celestial science. The Apostle Luke mentions Cainan in his genealogy of Jesus, Luke chapter 3, and Luke 1, 1-4, a statement of facts given full credence because of Luke 1, 1-4, where he talks about his careful, thorough research. By means of Chinese mythology, which is also given dates, which makes it more than mythology, but it's Chinese history and mythology, but by means of Chinese mythology, Jehovah makes sure that the truth of our ancestry as humans has not been lost forever. Isn't that a marvelous thing that we were able to come up? I just was researching this. I didn't know anything about Chinese history. And as I was doing it, I just investigated and suddenly found the Chinese history out of nowhere that coincided with what we were learning in terms of what time period it was. Jehovah makes sure that the truth of our ancestry has not been lost. Kanji saw a phoenix flying in the sky and was inspired. That's the story in the Chinese mythology. Kanji, or as we call him, Kainan, became interested in studying the heavens and the different kinds of animals. And he's mentioned as being a student of the heavens. I think it's in the Book of Jubilees. Kainan is described as being a student of the heavens. But he studied the different kinds of animals, everything on earth and above, and through his study of creation, he then created writing. That's Kangji. Kangji, who's the Chinese equivalent of Kainan. Kainan was said to have Kainan, the Hebrew equivalent of Kangji, was said to have invented astronomy. So we conclude that he is Kangji. Fuxi is another name for Kangji. Fuxi, the word Xi, isn't that the word for emperor too? But Kangji, he was one of the preeminent emperors. He preceded the Yellow Emperor by two emperors. He was the second before, not the immediate predecessor of the Yellow Emperor, but of course not an official emperor like the Yellow Emperor. And he was, Kang Ji was the inventor of writing, and he invented writing during the time of the Yellow Emperor, his grandson, in our understanding. So all of this is explained easily with the Bible chronology by Jehovah, his chronology. It's amazing, isn't it? But I mean, it's still vague. There's lots of things in the Chinese mythology which are not the same as exactly what the Bible says, or that there are new things to learn about. There's always more to learn. It's so intriguing and interesting. In China, writing is said to have begun during the reign of the Yellow Emperor, like I just mentioned, as an improvement over the use of knots for record keeping. They used to use knots. They'd tie knots, and that's how they kept their records. And that was an old method, obviously would seem to be inadequate compared to writing. To tie knots, how much work that would be. Kainan died in 2685 BCE in genealogy, which is our chronology. The name for our chronology is genealogy, we call it. Because originally I started out investigating my own family name. Turns out the name Green comes from the name Karina. That's why, and I think that's why the song I Love Karina appealed to me so much. I didn't know why, but that's why, because the name Green comes from Garin, which actually is the word for ark. But it also is the first place the ark landed was Green. In other words, there was some greenery at the point where the ark first landed after the deluge. But Karin means ark also, and the name Karina is connected to the name Green intimately by that. So genealogy is an evidently appropriate name for the chronology. So writing is thus dated as 26, according to the death of Kainan. Writing is dated, and according to the beginning of the reign of the Yellow Emperor, 2699 to 2685 BCE for the invention of early Chinese, because Kainan died in 2685 and the Yellow Emperor began ruling, as we call him Eber. Eber's reign as Yellow Emperor began in 2699 and continued until 2588 BCE. Lei Tzu, these are the four wives of the Yellow Emperor. Lei Tzu. Lei Tzu. Fang Lei. Tong Yu and Mo Mu are the names of the four wives of the Yellow Emperor from Chinese myth. It's so much more than myth, though, when it gives us dates, isn't it? And when it gives us stories that illuminate and, you know, enliven and just inspire us, you know, to learn more about these things. When the things we learn from the Chinese mythology brings enrichment to our lives, then we know that it must be true. There must be an immense amount of truth in it. That's how we know what the truth is, when it really adds something real to us and that we can return to in our times of trouble, and we can meditate on it in our times of trouble as well. Of course, in times of trouble, we're going to be meditating on whatever we need to in order to get through the time of trouble. But you know that saying, you know, there's that song, smile when you're, whatever the words are, smile, da 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 da. Da 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 da. That song Smile, it was featured in one of Charlie Chaplin's, I think Charlie Chaplin wrote that song actually. Featured in one of his movies, but he may have written the music part of it, not the lyrics. But that was a very, very well known song. But the idea of smiling when you're in trouble, that is what I think, relates really well. It doesn't mean try to get as much trouble as you can and then smile. It means, to me, a big part of what it means is, you know, being able to reject all the negative, right? Avoiding, like, we're exposed to negative things all the time, but we can avoid it as much as possible. And we can reject it whenever we do. I mean, we can let it bounce off us. We can be avoiding it at all times so that when we're encountering negative ideas, negative thoughts, like if I say to someone, okay, alcohol is bad, some people will think, well, that means drugs are okay. But I'm not saying that. I assume that everybody knows drugs are wrong. Drugs are bad. They're poisonous. They're not natural. They're not good. Even natural things can be bad sometimes. But alcohol is obviously not a natural food. It's not a food. It's a poison. So when I talk about alcohol, I'm just talking about all poisons generally. I'm not saying drugs are good. But, you know, so you have to have this ability to know, to be able to reject what's bad or be exposed to the negative but not be affected by it. Now, the reason why drugs are a very difficult problem, because everyone's looking for health, you see. And if you're not finding new foods every day that are benefiting you and making you stronger and better and smarter and happier and more energetic, then you're going to be looking for drugs or something. You're going to be looking for something. And it turns out that a lot of people, all they have is drugs because they don't have anything else, because they don't know how to use the internet. They don't know how to do anything in nutrition. Nobody understands nutrition. The doctors don't know anything about nutrition generally. You can't go to a doctor and get any help with nutrition, so don't even think about it. Don't go to a nutritionist either. None of those people know anything about anything. It's all about starting to study the basics, you know, like the first things that you learn are the first minerals in the body, the calcium, magnesium, what the vitamins are that support those minerals, and then you go from there, like it's vitamin K2 and vitamin D, and there are many forms of vitamin K2 you can get into if you can. But then there's all the other things that we rarely talk about. There's the omegas too, right? The lists go on and on and on. There's so many different things you can learn about and find out about. But you do it a little bit by a little bit. And then your prayers are answered, hopefully, in huge ways, you know, through discovery of amazing things that make you feel better and make you look better and make, you know, everything better. It is Saturday, October 19th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1946 hours, North American Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. Thank you so much for listening and watching today. I love you very much. In my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie. They're saying bye for now. That was Chapter 4, Paragraph 11, and 10, if you want to get into the recipe of the Ark of Urartu. So, that's it for today.